Hello and welcome to another episode of In the Margins. My name is Eli and here with me today is Meg. Meg is a UI UX graphic design student who is an aspiring professional and hobbyist artist. She loves digital art, writing horror and fantasy, and is an occasional guest of Anne, a Twitch streamer whose episode is already up at RadioLaurier.com. How you doing, Megan?
I'm great. How are you?
I am sleepy. First day of in-person yesterday.
That'll absolutely do it.
Yeah, I stayed from, like, because I left the house at about 8:30, and I was there from about, I'd say, 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock, so.
I can't remember the last time I was actually out of my apartment for that long. It's been a very long time.
It's weird, because, like, you spend 2-3 years just sitting in your room alone, and then it's like, bam, everything is back to normal, you're fine. And it's like, whoa, wait, what?
I've become accustomed to learning in the silence of my bedroom, not in a room full of people who are making sounds.
Yeah, or for languages, I've become accustomed to the ease of microphones and not having muffled French behind a mask.
Oh, goodness, I believe that.
I'm also accustomed to being able to play Minecraft during boring classes.
Yeah, I realized my fidgeting got so much worse because, like, at my desk, I can, like, fidget with things all day and, like, no one can see on, like, some online learning resource. But then in person, I'm like, oh, like, I don't want to disrupt anybody, but I can't listen because my hands want to move. Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know how. Basically, during the first class, I was just like, well, I'm going to pretend I'm taking notes and I'm going to, like, move my hands around.
That's, like, honestly, I, like, take notes, I doodle, like, I mean, like, I'm an artist and I feel like anybody, I feel like all artists doodle in class, like, that's, like, just a forever known fact, but at least I can, like, fidget without drawing all the attention to myself.
Wouldn't it be kind of funny if, like, some artists, like, not that, like, instead of doodling, they just, like, wrote music or something in class?
That would be really cool, actually. I'm sure that there must be people who did that. Like, I had a friend in high school who, she was really into math and science, and she would just, like, write math equations and do them, like, in her, like, English notes, and I was like, that is so far out of my
class?
Scope. Yeah, like, in a different class, just to, like, how, like, I would doodle in English or something, she would, like, solve math.
She can do that mindlessly?
Yeah, I'm like, I can't even, like, do that on a good day in a math class with a calculator. Like,
I'm afraid of your friend. Dear Lord.
Yeah, she's in school now for her PhD, so.
Oh, okay. What's her PhD in?
Psychology.
Not math?
No, she ended up actually switching out of a math program in university into psychology.
Oh, man.
Math is a hobby.
Oh, okay. Math is a hobby. She's gonna have, like, the best, like, taxes and, like, finance forms there are.
I know. I was straight up like, can I hire you to, like, do my taxes and stuff when I can't do them? Like, I know that that's not your job, but, like, I will pay you. Please.
That's crazy. I can't, like, I can understand doing math for fun in, like, some instances. Like, I don't like math class, but I enjoyed math. Yeah. I can't imagine just, like, how do you mindlessly do math?
I don't know, but I was thoroughly impressed. I didn't believe her. I was like, there's no way. And she showed me, and I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, if someone told me that, I'd be like, you're fucking with me. You're messing with me.
Oh, absolutely. Like, this is not real. But no, she used to do algebra in her notes all the time.
Imagine being able to do math.
Couldn't be me. Absolutely. I am an artist through and through. Everything visual, writing, anything like that, great. Math, the numbers and I, we're not best friends.
Something that's funny to me, I just realized, like, there are people, you know how you sit in math class and you're like, I don't understand anything, or this is really incredibly boring. There are people doing that in English class.
Which, like, again, I'm in the same boat with you, where for me, I, like, found English was a sort of my, like, easy slack off class maybe in high school. Like, everyone had a class that they knew that they could just, like, get through, go in, get out, kind of goes through the day. And for me, science and math were never those ones. Those ones were always, like, I need to think really hard and try really hard. But I guess, yeah, like, for other people, math was their, like, kind of goes through class, and then English took a lot of their time and effort.
Mm-hmm. I can't conceptualize that in my head that math would ever be the easy class.
Me either. Again, it's probably just how my brain, like, probably how both our brains work, but to me, math has always been, like, the daunting class. Like, I hear math, and like, I haven't taken a math class since grade 11, and I'm 25 years old now. but as soon as I could get out of numbers, I was like, yeah, no, got my math credits, cool, done.
Yeah.
We're out of here.
I think it can be fun in, like, some circumstances. Like, if you're doing it on your own, and it's, like, a puzzle, and you figure it out, it's fun, but math class? Ugh.
Yeah, ironically enough, one of my favorite video games that I've been playing with your sibling is one
Zero Escape.
Where, the Zero Escape games, and like half of the puzzles in that game are math, and we had a really good time figuring them out and doing it, because I guess like the stakes are low, right? Like, I'm not being graded, my future isn't in jeopardy.
They give you a calculator, you're not timed, it's fun.
And like the math in that, we actually got like really fast at it and had a really good time, but like you throw me like, hey, could you do tax? Like, could you calculate taxes on this delivery order? I'm like, absolutely not.
And make sure you do it in 20 minutes.
Yeah, and do it in your head or on paper. Yeah. No, 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 no.
Please don't ask me to do math in my head.
I can only do math in a rewarding video game like setting.
I was actually, so I want to go abroad, and so to do that, you have to do a bunch of math on everything. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to calculate the costs and expenses of living there. And because I get freaky outy about math, and I also have a learning disability for it.
Yeah.
I did the math, but it came out, I accidentally doubled or tripled the amount. And I was like, my mom was like, what do you mean it's going to cost like 60K for 1 year? That can't be right. And I was like, I'm just going to be poor. I'm never going to leave this country again. Yeah. And she was like, no, redo the math. And I did it. And it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm fine.
Like 20K is a little bit more understandable, maybe.
Yeah.
No, I'm in the same boat. I got diagnosed with dyscalculia a few years ago. And I was like, wow, that explains a lot of the math class crying in high school. Dang.
Yeah,
a lot of things make more sense.
Did you also nearly fail like all of your math classes? Because I nearly failed my grade 9 math, but then I was lucky enough to get a tutor.
Oh, so. That's really good. I was in the same boat, I come from a very like intelligent academic family background, mm-hmm. and I've always been like the quote unquote like gifted kid. The whole I have an autism diagnosis too. The whole spectrum of like you did really really well for a really long time, and then I hit high school math, and I started doing really really bad, and I almost failed it. I had never even gotten like a 70 before, mm-hmm. And then I like almost failed. So I switched into the academic or out of the academic stream into the applied stream, from the university level to college level, and that helped a little bit. But yeah, like. Definitely the lowest grades I've gotten in my entire life have all been the math classes I took in high school. That was the closest to failing I ever got.
It's a shock when you, for most of your life, have not, like, or if you have expectations for yourself to get high grades, and then out of nowhere, it feels like you get a really low mark. Like, I remember being absolutely devastated.
Oh, yeah, no, when I, like, got my first, like, report card in high school, and it was, like, you know, like, 90s in English, even in science, I think I was holding up, like, an 80 or something at that point, but then math, it was, like, hey, math, she has a 55, and I was, like, oh, my, I failed, that's it, my life is over, I am 14 years old, and I've ruined my life.
It really does feel like that, doesn't it? It feels like when you get a bad grade, it's, like, oh, my life is over, nice knowing you guys.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, now with the program I'm in, now I can laugh about it. I'm 25. I haven't taken a math class in close to 10 years. And, like, all the math I have to do at this point, like, willingly, I have a calculator for. And, again, like, we have a bit of an age gap, so I don't know how much the curriculum changed between mm-hmm. your and I's high school experience. But for me, at least, we weren't allowed calculators ever. Like, it was a really big deal. Like, it was, like, no calculators for any math, like, besides, like, the graphing ones for graphing class.
You also went to one of the worst high schools, though.
I did, yes.
I'm going to say that right here for the listeners. Meg went to one of the worst high schools, and I escaped that. So
yeah, both you and your sibling did. I'm very jealous.
Yeah, I did that on purpose. I did that for a reason.
No, it was the smart idea. But yeah, and like now, and it was always pushed, like, you know, in the real world, it's not just calculators. And now it's like, you know, I have a smartphone attached to my hand or a computer attached to my fingertips, like almost every hour of every day I could possibly need one.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes, like, you know, when they're like, well, what are you going to do in the grocery store when you want to figure out what your total is going to be? I'm like, I pull out my smartphone in my pocket. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I've never had to, like, think about, like, that kind of stuff since graduating high school.
Yeah. I think it's important to learn how to do some stuff in your head, and it's important to remember how to do things and not rely on technology. But at the same time, it's like, okay, when in a workplace am I ever going to be like, someone's going to be like, hey, calculate all these business expenses and don't you dare use a calculator. Like,
yeah, and I think I'd be more open to, like, you know, if I didn't have a learning disability with numbers, I would feel probably like I could do more math in my head and I would try to practice more. Mm-hmm. But like, just once they basically were like, yeah, this isn't just like you being dumb, this is like your brain can't read numbers the same way
mm-hmm.
maybe the average person's brain, I was like, yeah, I don't care anymore, than a calculator forever.
Yeah.
Like, I'm throwing in the towel, I'm giving me myself in high school one L.
once you eventually, like, either get rid of, like, the, because for me, I struggled with it because I felt like I was cheating. But then once I hit high school, I was like, I'm using a calculator.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks to me, you guys.
This is not cheating. This is using, like, what the world gives you. Like, it's not cheating to, like, wear good sneakers when you run so your feet don't hurt. I'm going to use a calculator to do math in my day-to-day life. Because, like, there's no other way it's getting done. Not a dang chance.
So, speaking of high school, I guess not even speaking of high school, because you got into art before that. When did you start doing art?
For me, I think probably as soon as I was able to start, like, playing with, like, paper, pencils, crayons. Like, I mean, like, I know that most kids, like, when they're really little, like, drawing is, like, a big part of learning development and all of that. But that never sort of stopped being a habit for me. Like, literally since I could remember, I've spent, like, my free time drawing something.
That's pretty much what I remember of you. Like, anytime I came over to your house, it was just you and my sister drawing.
Yeah. For context, all of it, literally for hours.
Yeah, for context for anyone listening, Meg is a family friend and so has pretty much known me since I was born. What's the age gap between us? You're 4-5 years older than me?
So I was born in 96.
Yeah, and I was born 2001. So you're 7 years older than me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure you've known me pretty much since I was born.
Yeah. Like, I've definitely known you as, like, oh, I remember, like a big deal of you going into the first grade. Like, I'm old enough to remember, like, oh, I remember when you went to first grade for the first time.
You remember that? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with you in your kitchen about it.
Wait, now I'm curious. What did we talk about?
Oh, I was asking you if you were excited, and you were absolutely not into the idea of it. You were like, no. You were like, I'm already over school. And I'm like, oh, just you wait. I say, like, in the fourth grade, just you wait.
I love the idea of this, like, 6-7-year-old being like, yeah, I'm done. I've experienced 2 years of this, and I'm done. Like, this kindergartner just already done.
Yeah, you were like, no, I'm not excited. I want to stay home. I want to do what I want to do. And I was like, I mean, yeah, same. But you just finished easy school. Hold on. You're about to enter, like, the numerical public school system.
Yeah, now you're a number. Watch out.
Look out. But yeah, basically since then, I've always been really into, like, art. Specifically, I got into writing pretty young, too. Your sister and I, again, just because, like, we grew up together, have a lot of very similar hobbies.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we were watching you guys.
We used to write stuff. Yeah. And, like, we used to, like, have notebooks just full of, like, us writing stories from, again, like, as young as, like, I think I was in grade 3 when I, like, remember starting doing this, like, with your sister. So, drawing and writing definitely from a super, super young age.
Yeah, I remember also, I still have, you guys used to, at one point, you were drawing on t-shirts, and I still have the t-shirt you guys made for me with a Pokemon on the front, me and the Pokemon.
Oh, I think it was a Tepig.
Yeah, it's a Tepig.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I actually remember making that in my basement.
Yeah!
I actually remember us making that in my basement. I'd not thought about that in a very long time.
I still have it. It's really washed out now, but I still have it.
That's a miracle that you can even still, because I don't think that we actually used like proper fabric.
No, you didn't.
Or anything.
It got washed by accident. It got washed by accident twice, but it's still like you can see it, and I remember the colors. So,
hey, you know what? Whatever markers we use, shout out to them. because Lord knows they were not for that purpose, and they should not still be visible.
I should see if I can get you two to like redraw that on a t-shirt for me.
That would be really funny. Actually, I would definitely do that. I think that's really funny.
That would be really funny. Right. So you started art at a young age. You were just born into the art. You came out of the womb and you were like, I'm ready.
Which again is super weird because not a single person in my family is an artist. Like at all. Yeah. I come from a very like science academic, like most of my family is in medicine. I was like, I love to draw. What's up?
Yeah, your parents were both like into pharmaceuticals and things like that. And yeah. Your sister is like a nurse.
She's in nursing, yeah.
Yeah. And then you're like, I'm gonna draw.
Yeah, like it's not like, so like I had friends who was like, yeah, like my mom taught me to draw when I was a kid, and I was like, yo, like in like grade four, my parents were like, you can draw better than us. Like we can draw maybe a stick figure. Like, good luck, kid.
That's really funny because I remember you and Rachel, didn't you go to the same art school for a while?
I went for a very short period. I know Ray went a lot longer than me, but we did a little bit. I did a bunch of, like, my parents really wanted me to be into sports, so I tried really hard to do more sports than art stuff. Shocker, did not stick.
No, if I remember correctly, you got a lot of injuries.
Yeah, I'm a very clumsy individual. So I did a lot more sports than art growing up until like I had a little bit more autonomy over my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I did like one or two art classes with your sister.
Yeah, because I remember you guys hanging out over some books that she, I think, still has and just drawing and doing like mostly anime, if I remember correctly.
Oh, we have some of those like really cursed like early 2000s how to draw manga books. Like,
yeah, we still have those.
Some of those. Yeah, those spent a lot of time drawing like just exact ripoffs out of that thing over and over again for sure.
Something else I remember is from those crappy books is when they're like, women should be, their hips should be the widest part of their body, and I was like, when was the last time you looked at a woman?
Yeah, rib cages are fully optional in that situation. like I think it's like the stats, like one in every three women are born with a rib cage.
Stats
for those books. Like when you look at art from those books, like maybe one woman drawn out of the hundreds in that book have some sort of rib cage.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
Usually like chest into hips.
I thought you meant like in real life, and I was like, wait, hold on, what?
That would be a shocking statistic. Like, just, so, I don't know if they know this. No ribcage. We are just hips.
Oh, crap. I didn't know. I didn't know all this time I had no ribcage.
Surprise.
Do you find that a lot of the books that you were working with had bad women's anatomy, or was it just like the anime books?
I definitely, a lot of them had women's anatomy, at least to focus on very specific areas of the body.
Boobs and hips?
Yeah. Boobs and hips were sort of things that, like, I remember one of my parents commenting, like, oh, whenever you draw girls, they're, like, really busty. And I was just like, that's just what it looks like out of the books. I don't know what to tell you. But it's like,
that's just what women look like.
Like, out of all the art books that we got, there were so little things. Like, I think every artist has had the moment of, like, trying to draw hands and they're pulling their hair out. Like, they never had hand references or shoes, but it was always, like, here's a woman's body and here's a woman's face. Good luck. And it was always, like, you know, big eyes, big chest, big hips, mm-hmm. Small waist, go off. Even in non-anime stuff, it was like, do women look like this? I don't remember that.
You look in the mirror and you're like, huh, Do we? Are you sure?
Yeah. It was like bad Instagram body standards, but like in how to draw people books. It started real young there.
It's a little bit concerning when you think about it, how much that could have contributed to like people's body image.
Well, and then it spreads, right? So if everyone's taught, you know, you draw a woman like this, everyone draws a woman like this. They post that, and then women are like, I don't look like that. Even though it's like a photo and not a drawing, you're still like influenced, like, oh, well, like, even in comics, like, women are drawn to look like this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the same proportions. And then that all the, you know, the whole cycle of like body images can come even out of things that aren't just social media, right? Can come out of like art and like how to draw art books like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a problem that needs to be addressed in art?
I think definitely just the bias of like, I think every industry is bad for it, but like the anime and comics industry is pretty rough for it specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, I mean, like there's always like, if you look at like women on the front of like a comic book, like me and your sister regularly will tear apart, like, how does a butt move like that? Like, that leg can't be there. There's no way. And it's just like posing these women in very specific ways to make it more attractive per se to purchase the book. And then again, it's spreading these biases of like, well, if a woman doesn't look like this, she's not good enough to be a superhero, to be on the front page of something, to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really bad precedent for everybody, not even just women, but how people perceive women, right?
Mm-hmm. Or even if you think about like, now that people can edit videos, now people can, I don't know if deceive is the right word, because I think for some people, their body image is just very warped. But
yeah,
just edit their body so much that other people will be like, okay, if she can look like this, why can't I?
Exactly. And like, I was really bad for that in high school, specifically looking at a lot of like women in media. And, you know, I used to edit like so many of my selfies on Instagram when I was in high school, mm-hmm. trying to like look a certain way. And like, you could tell, like, I mean, back then there was not as much good editing software as there is available now. But like, that started really young for me. And again, a lot of it comes from looking at how people edit themselves. And again, I don't consider it deceit, because like a lot of people do it out of, you know, a need. Like maybe even like when it's their job, a lot of women are like risk losing their job online if they don't look a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of just this like big ball of pressure that there's no right answer of like how to fix it maybe right now. But like, it definitely is an issue that needs to be addressed, mm-hmm. by all means.
Speaking of issues that need to be addressed, you are a UX UI designer. What is that?
So what the actual abbreviation stands for, UI is user interface and UX is user experience. But sort of to go with that is also user interaction. So sort of to boil it down, an interface is anything that we're interacting with, like visually and physically. So everything from like the Facebook app has an interface, like where the images are placed and everything, to think of like a TV remote. Like, mm-hmm. there's an interface to that, like it's set up a certain way. And the idea of like UI UX design is the study specifically, it's a lot of like actual research, not just like art and stuff done with it, where it's like how people interact with these items. And then how do you make that easier, better, more accessible, more interesting to interact with, and make it like the best version of itself that it could possibly be.
That's really cool, actually. And it's, I believe we had a conversation about it, because I asked you about it once, and we kind of related it to if the Persona 5 game, Persona 5 Royale,
yeah,
with their overlay. So the overlay would be like when you hit the menu or you look at like the stats on the bottom of the screen, and how stylized and easy and accessible it was.
Yeah, and like that for me is like, and it's sort of a cheesy reason, but like Persona 5, the first version of it came out before I was actually in this program. I was going into makeup art before I did this. And I was like obsessed with the menus in that game. And that really got me interested in like researching and like getting really into like, you know, like, oh, like I never really thought about game menus looking a certain way or like interfaces looking a certain way before, and like blending so seamlessly into whatever you're doing. And that kind of was like the first ticket to like, oh, like this is more than just like people press a, you know, put a play button here, put a go button here, you press it and you carry on.
Yeah. So when it comes to UX UI, you wanted to talk about accessibility for, I think, just in general. I don't know if you have any specific things in mind.
I mean, it's sort of like, so when you look at UI UX, sort of like everyone focuses in like some certain area of it. And for me, like, I am like, I guess, quote unquote, majoring in accessibility design, because that's something that's really important to me. And that can cover everything from like visual accessibility. So like, you know, could your website be easily navigated by somebody who is colorblind, to things like, so I have a disability. I have fibromyalgia. Which is, for those who don't know, it's basically a pain disorder where like it's pain and exhaustion that's sort of, it's not super well known, so I don't have a great definition for it, but it's sort of just like your body hurts all the time and doing small tasks can like really knock you out for a few days. And so I've gotten really into physical product design that helps with that kind of thing. So like a really good example is cleaning my cat's cat litter is really hard on my body because you have to get crouched down. And sifting and sort of being in that pose for a long time, like, really kills me. And so looking into things that it's like, okay, so I have this scooper now that actually I could use standing up. It has sort of like a claw on it. And it has like a hand squeeze, so I can squeeze it without having to bend down and sift it. And I just shake it like that.
That's great.
So sort of like I focus on, between that and visual, like how to just like turn products that people might not think of who don't have these disabilities into things that are sort of normal in our society and are easy for everyone to get to make life less difficult for those who have maybe a difficult starting point.
Do you find it kind of frustrating then? Because I know sometimes people will look at inventions like, let's say, Snuggies, like the blankets that cover only the front half of you and have like arms and stuff. And people would be like, oh, why would you need that? But in reality, it's good for people who are in wheelchairs or who have mobility issues. And does it ever frustrate you to see people talking like that about some inventions?
Yeah, so almost every single, like, I think of a lot of like Facebook videos when I think of these things where it's like lazy inventions made for people who are lazy.
Yeah.
Instead of peeling your potato, you put it in this thing, spin it once and it's peeled. Just get a potato peeler. But, you know, like, some people have limited range of motion in their hands or in their bodies, etc. And a lot of these things that we sort of laugh at and quote as like, oh, it's a lazy, just do it the good old fashioned way, it's not that hard, things are for people who it is that hard for. And then it sort of adds the stigma of like, oh, well, if you buy this automatic potato peeler, you're lazy, which already disabled people get that narrative their whole lives. Of like, you're lazy, just try harder. So it is frustrating because we want to see more of these products on the market, and just even like a lot of them you can only buy online. And it's like, it would be great to be able to walk into a Walmart and buy like, oh, like there's this cat litter scoop that I can use standing up, to go back to my previous example. Like, I had to order that online. And it's just like, the bigger the narrative of like, oh, it's for lazy people, the harder it is for people who need these accessibility tools to get them, especially in a non-biased manner. So that definitely is like a major frustration when I see online.
Yeah, and especially if, like, let's say, for example, there's someone in your life who doesn't know about your disability, and they say, or maybe aren't supportive of like the things you need. Like, for example, fibromyalgia, maybe they're constantly be like, oh, why don't you just get up? Why don't you just do things? And then they see you get that. And it's just like, because people have been mocking it, they're going to mock you about that too.
Yeah, exactly. And then it sort of closes the door. Because again, like, this is something to mental health where disabilities aren't super like commonly talked about things. Like, people aren't super comfortable being like, oh, I have this. And people are kind of judgy about people who say certain disabilities and things like that, especially when they're not super visible, like mine, for example, where, like, you can't look at me and go, oh, she has like a movement disability. Like, I, at first glance, I'm a very average standard human being. So then I buy things like this, and it's sort of like, you kind of get side eyes of like, oh, you really need that. And it's like, well, I do, actually. Like, yeah. And it's not a bad thing that I do, because now that I have this, I can actually spend more time cleaning the house without being sore and not being able to, or doing things I enjoy without having to, like, go take a nap and lie down for a while.
Do you ever get side-eyed for, like, maybe taking the elevator instead of taking the stairs?
Oh my gosh, I have a very specific story about this. So
Go ahead.
So I lived in a college residence 2 years ago. And so for I sort of a TLDR, like too long didn't read for everybody. I got vertigo for 2 weeks and it was really, really intense. And I had a really hard time moving around. And I lived on the second floor of my res building. And so when I had vertigo, I couldn't, it wasn't safe for me to go up and downstairs because I was collapsing all the time and I was fainting all the time. So when I was, if I had someone with me, I could maybe take the stairs. But in general, if I was moving by myself, I needed to go on the elevator for safety. Yeah. And people would actually comment, like, are you actually getting on for the second floor? And it's like, yeah, like I am, because like I don't want to fall down the stairs and hit my head. And again, because like, you know, you look at me and I'm not in a wheelchair or on crutches, doesn't mean that I still don't need the accessibility of using this for one floor. Like, you don't know who I am. How dare you? Maybe I'm just really, even if I'm not disabled, like, maybe I'm just really tired from work today and don't want to go up the stairs. Like, I have a really harsh opinion on, like, laziness culture and how people deem people lazy for wanting to take care of themselves sometimes. And it's like, disability or vertigo aside, if I had a really long shift on my feet all day at work, maybe I do want to elevator up one floor. Like, maybe I just want that minute of rest. And that's okay. Like, that's not, like, you're not a bad person for doing that in the slightest.
Did you tell the people that, like, made comments that you were having vertigo?
So, basically, I just said, like, I've been sick and I can't take the stairs. And, like, that's that. Like, it's not your business to know why. Like, shut up. Like, what's your issue? Basically, I told them, I was like, I don't see what your issue is. It's 10 more seconds in your day. Sorry.
Yeah. Because I think if someone said that to me, I would have ripped them a new one.
Like, I am definitely better spoken now than I used to be. Like, when I was a little bit younger, I was pretty soft-spoken. Especially with, like, my new diagnosis and stuff now, and sort of having to self-advocate a lot for, like, because a lot of even doctors don't fully believe in fibromyalgia diagnoses. So having to, like, for the past year or so since I've been diagnosed, really fight for, like, everything, I've become much more harsh. And I'm like, look, you don't want to talk to me right now about this.
None of your damn business. I've had something similar happen with extended family. I went to go see a dietitian because I have disordered eating problems. And so for a while I was around family and I would need to pop out, go talk to the dietitian. And they kept going, oh, where are you go? And so I was like, oh, I got to go talk to my dietitian. They were like, why are you seeing a dietitian? Why do you need that? And I was like, that's my business.
Yeah, like, I'm not asking you about, like, why is your marriage failing? Like, just, like, not, you know? Like, is it just free ball now? Do we just get to ask questions? Because if so, I'll ask questions. Like,
that's kind of funny.
I'm bad for that. If family asks me an intrusive question, I'll just ask the one back. And I'm like, see, do you want to answer that? Neither do I.
I have I can't say all of it on air because I don't think it'd be school appropriate, but
yeah.
Someone was like talking about how their mother-in-law kept asking them, when are you having kids? And so she was like, okay, if your mother-in-law keeps asking you that, just get really tearful and say, oh, I would love to, but we never do things that would allow me to do that. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say. I'm gonna send you the clip, but I think you know what I mean.
I can put two and two together for this one. I can do a little bit of the math here, I think.
Yeah. So she was more graphic in the thing, you know, like she was like, if you say that, your mother-in-law will never ask you any questions again. She might not even look at you again.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes that's a win.
Do you feel that disabled people kind of get their privacy taken away a lot?
I for sure do. And again, so I have, like, so I'm very new to mine, so I can't speak super, like, I don't have a ton of experience yet. But even on things like, and it's people who don't mean any ill of me or anything, but, like, say I had plans with somebody, like an acquaintance, and I have to cancel last minute because, say, I'm having a really bad flare-up or something. If I don't want to disclose what exactly is wrong, a lot of people take it as like, oh, you're flaking last minute again. If I don't want to disclose, like, yeah, no, like, I don't feel well and I can't walk and I'm really dizzy. Like, I shouldn't have to explain every symptom I'm experiencing for it to be a valid reason for me not to be able to do something. But I feel like a lot of disabled people especially get that, where they aren't taken seriously or seen as flaky if they're not willing to just like share every detail about their health to prove that they maybe have a disability and then prove mm-hmm. that they deserve to be able to rest.
Do you ever feel, I guess, do you ever feel, there was a question in my head and it went somewhere. Hang on. What was it? No, it's gone.
maybe later it'll come back on and we can answer it.
Maybe later it'll come back. I think it was something about, no, it's gone.
Yeah, she's left the building.
The question has left the building. Do you ever feel frustrated with your family or feel like people around you don't get the disability thing?
Oh, for sure. And for me, I have maybe a shorter patience with my family than I should sometimes. But I get really annoyed because my family is all in the medical field and they still do a lot of these things where I'm like, maybe to like an aunt or an uncle who's a nurse, when they make a comment, I'm like, you're treating people every day who have things like this. Like, if all people to like respect this or understand this, you should. Like, mm-hmm. getting called like lazy if like I'm at a family dinner and I ask someone, oh, while you're up, could you grab me water? It's like, you're the young one, why can't you? And it's like, it hurts.
Like, I don't know what to tell you, doc, I got a disability.
Or like with fibromyalgia, a really big symptom outside of pain is chronic fatigue and exhaustion. Mm-hmm. So I could sleep 20 hours a day if I let myself. And so sometimes at a family event, I have to take a nap where I'm going to actually fall asleep on this couch, like talking to them. Mm-hmm. And it's really seen as like disrespectful. And like, I'll get called in on it where it's like, hey, I need to go lie down for an hour. I just need to go lie down somewhere quiet for an hour. I don't feel well. And it's seen as antisocial or like, you know, like, oh, you don't want to be with us. You're going to go on mm-hmm. your phone. And it's like, no, like, I'm actually about to go like knock out for a bit because like I have like, I don't know how to explain it. I have a disability that makes me need to sleep and therefore mm-hmm. I need to go sleep. And again, for me, I have a shorter patience because most of my family is in the health field. And I'm like, I don't get how this goes over your head of all people. Like, you went to school for this. You should know a little bit about this, right?
Mm-hmm. Was learning to advocate for yourself or learning to say no to things a big learning curve for you?
Yes. I'm sure you know this about me growing up. but for those listening, I am a very big yes man and I'm a very big people pleaser.
You were kind very of a big pushover.
Very big pushover, huge doormat, all of those words.
Meg was my babysitter and I just want to say I'm sorry. Megan was a very nice, gentle person, and then little me was kind of a nightmare sometimes.
You know what? It happens. You were also a kid. Like,
yeah.
Kids are nightmares, and that's the end of it. but yeah, no, so learning to self-advocate through a lot of the different issues that I've kind of gone through has been really a big learning curve because it's just not something that like I naturally feel comfortable or like even feel able to do. And so with this diagnosis, especially where it's a very physical and difficult thing sometimes, learning to be like, I would love to do this favor for you, like clean, like even if my mom was like, hey, could you load the dishwasher? It's so hard looking at your mom and having to say like, no. And it's not because I don't want to. It's because right now I'm in a lot of pain and bending over mm-hmm. like that's not going to fly. And it's just sort of a scary, like my mom's not a scary person, but like it's a scary thing to have to be like this favor that I should do because I've been living here for a month with you. I can't, and I could force myself to, but then I'm gonna knock myself out for hours or even days doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely been like a really difficult transition, but I think it's also just been helpful for me as somebody who was too far the other way before, where I just would say yes to absolutely everything. I think learning to say no has been a very good learning experience for me in general, but definitely a difficult one for sure.
I think a lot of people don't realize how much, like I can only speak from the mental disability perspective with autism, but I don't think people sometimes realize how much, I guess, normal things that other people do can take out of disabled people. Like, for example, for sure. With your dishwashing or a cat litter, like, that could take you out for quite a while. Or for me, if I go to school, like, I went to school yesterday for like a full day, and that's like a normal people thing to do. I come back, I don't want to see anyone for a week. I'm just exhausted.
Yeah, and again, people sometimes trivialize those things as like, hey, but just try to do it, and you'll be okay. And it's like, and age-old comparison of like, you broke your leg, just walk on it, suck it up, you'll be okay. But it is like that, where it's like, we deem this as normal, and because it's not like something super visible, maybe, it's like, well, I get that you saw people at school yesterday, but like, that's life, get over it, go see somebody again, you have to.
That's, and it's like, exactly what they say, that's life.
Yeah, and it's like, well, yeah, maybe for somebody who's extremely physically typical and neurotypical, that's life. But that's not my life. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just not doable for me. And I totally get how frustrating that can be.
By the way, I know the autism diagnosis was, like, relatively recent, because I remember talking to you
and Yeah, that and was Anne maybe a year and a half ago.
Yeah, so do you want to talk about that? Because I was diagnosed when I was 8-9 years old.
Yeah, I would love to. So for people who aren't super familiar with autism in general and sort of how it's viewed, society sort of has a view that women don't get autism.
Yep.
Or it's very quote-unquote uncommon for women to have autism, which we all know, like, if you look at numbers, is
not
just
true.
Not the case. Like sex doesn't have anything to do with autism at all. And especially being an adult. So I think I had just turned 23 when I was seeking a diagnosis for it. And so the two big things with autism sort of misconceptions is it's a boy's disease and you get it when you're a kid and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, only kids have autism. You hit 18, you're cured. You're done.
Wow. You're no longer autistic. I didn't know I was cured.
Yeah, wow. Congrats, by the way. but so sort of like my parents didn't really pick up on that anything was different just because autism is different for everybody. I'm very good at masking it. I'm very good at sort of keeping things to myself and not talking when something is difficult. So as a kid, nothing really seemed wrong besides, oh, she's just very introverted and hates being touched and
You're
can't
quirky.
Read numbers. Yeah, she's just kind of weird. But we love her. And it's like, so nothing was really noticed as a kid. And as I got older and just started having more open conversations with people, I realized that like a lot of my experiences that I thought were just the global experience maybe weren't. And maybe
I had a conversation recently where I was like, I was talking about how I can feel sounds when they happen, and everyone else in the room was like, "What?" I was like, "Oh, this isn't a universal experience." Okay,
yeah, and just because like a lot of people just assume that their experiences, you know, like, oh, I feel weird. Everyone feels this thing. A really big clue for me in getting my diagnosis was I'm very overstimulated very fast, especially when it comes to sound and then visuals. Ironically, for an artist and a musician. but so, like, I was like, oh, like, people haven't, you know, it's like, I went to college before my diagnosis and I'd go to parties, you know, I would try to be social and couldn't understand how people weren't like sweating. Like, I would physically be sweating and shaking. I feel like I had a fever because people were talking, there was lights and music. And I was like so uncomfortable, and I was getting so mad at everybody for no reason. Like, I felt irritated, everything was bothering me, and I thought that people would just have to go on these little breaks where they have to go walk around in silence outside in the cold to like make themselves less irritated. No.
Nobody else does that.
Yeah. And so a lot of these sort of symptoms that end up aligning with autism, where it's things like that, social cues, not my forte. I've grown up with a diagnosis, I've gotten a little bit better than I think other people sometimes with autism at figuring them out.
You were also best friends with ADHD and autism. Like,
yeah, that definitely didn't help.
Stereotypes. Like, I don't know. I'm putting this in the kindest way. My sister and Megan's other friends are like the stereotypical versions of these things. And it is the funny. Yeah. And then there's me. I also have you just grew up surrounded by neurodivergent people. So for you, you're like, eh.
yeah, nothing's weird. People are just like this, right? And then yeah. I hit high school where none of you guys went to my school.
No.
And I was like, oh, something's weird here. And like another really big thing for me is I'm not really a touchy person, and I haven't been since a baby. And so this actually is what helped me get my diagnosis too, was like referring to my childhood a lot. But so when I was born, my mom jokes a lot. As a newborn baby, I hated being held. Mm-hmm. And to this day, that stands for like, as a baby, you know, babies cry to be picked up and held, right? Mm-hmm. I would be silent until I was picked up, and then I would like make lose it.
You're like, no, put me down.
And to this day, like, I'm not a very, like, I'm very awkward with touch. It doesn't really come naturally to me. Same with eye contact, just to be a stereotype. and things like that. So sort of adding all of that. Again, at first, doctors are kind of like, oh, you write one too many things on the internet. You don't have autism. You are an adult woman. But then over time, you know, they start to realize, like, again, just because, like, I really, again, you have to really self-advocate. And I was like, I know that this seems like maybe to a doctor that I'm just saying a lot of this, but it's true. And this is what my experience is. And it's difficult. And sort of having to really fight, like, I just want somebody to look at me unbiased. Just, I want someone to look at me like I am a 9-year-old boy. Would that change how you look at this, any of this? Because if so, like, look at me like that then. Like, whatever I need to do. And again, like, a lot of people also sort of laughed at me when I was, like, trying to get my autism diagnosis. Because it's like, well, what's that going to do for you? Why do you need diagnosis? Like, there's, like, you know, like, it's all, like, I don't take any medication for this or anything. And it's like, no, but it would just be nice, like, at least for me, it would be nice to know, have a name for this and be able to sort of, like, at least for me, understand why I do things a certain way or why I am the way I am, to kind of make it funny. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, like, why am I like this? And it's autism for me. Like, and I got the diagnosis, and it's like comforting to know, and it makes me more kind to myself, or like something
makes
happens.
Other people kinder.
Yeah, where it's, something happens and it's like, oh, that's why it's like this. Oh, yeah. So I actually should be nice to myself. Like, I shouldn't try to fix this. Because there's nothing to be fixed, it's just how my brain works. And yeah. That's okay.
I know that people tend to become a lot more understanding when they find out you're autistic. Especially when you're a kid. I know you can't speak to that experience, but for me, when I told people that I was autistic, they were like, oh, okay, I understand why you're like this now.
And then for me, I don't know, if, I'm sure you've experienced this too, where sometimes people with infantile, like, you know the word I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Infantilize, like, you, where they kind of start talking to you like, oh, hi, Meg. And it's like, no.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like,
yeah, I had that in high school where they would be like, they would talk to, I would say, oh, I'd like go up to my teacher. I'd be like, hey, I have autism. I have an IEP. This is what I need. They'd start, like, they'd place me in the front of class. They'd, like, talk to me like I was, like, this itty-bitty child. They'd give
double
me extra
check your
worksheets.
Homework and stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, no, like, I don't need this.
Like, I told you what I need.
Yeah.
So just do that. Don't just add extra stuff in there that I didn't ask for, because that's really weird of you to do. I am, like, 16 years old. I don't need you to, like, spell check my homework, math teacher.
Oh, my God. I think if you were working with a kid who, let's say, wasn't advocating for themselves, sure, do some extra stuff, have a conversation with them about it. But like, if a kid's coming up to you and telling you what they need, do what they ask you to do. Don't add extra stuff, please.
And like, don't kind of cross-reference autism with other symptoms or other things that maybe
or helplessness.
Yeah, or, you know, different kinds of learning disabilities. Like, just because, you know, so like, a lot of people, and I don't know where the stigma has come from, think that I'm dyslexic.
Oh.
Which is, like, sort of the opposite. I'm a very good fast, like, I speed read as a hobby. Like, I love reading.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very fast, very quick, very good reader. And it's like, oh, you're autistic. So, like, you know, like, you have trouble reading and writing. And it's like, those are actually two of my better skills. No, that, like, I'm not, did I say I was dyslexic? I don't remember saying that.
The irony of the two autistic people who are bad at math.
Yeah, right. I thought that was like the autism superpower, was like, we have to be really good at music and math and, you
nope.
know, go full Rain Man, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's just simply not the case, because autism is a spectrum and it's different for everybody Who would have
thought? We're just I think that's the thing people miss when they talk about disabilities, or like seeing disabled people when they're like, you're so brave and whatever. It's like, no, I'm just a person. I'm just trying to live my life. That's it. I just want to live my life.
Yeah, I'm just the average person who can't listen to one form of audio at the same time. That's it. Don't play two songs at once or I might cry. But besides that, like, I'm just a person. I don't know what to tell you.
Who plays more than one piece of music at one time, though?
So, it happens sometimes, and I'm like, yo.
That's no. Weird.
That's... My brain will self-destruct.
My thoughts on that. That's strange. I don't know why you would do that.
Yeah, me, same. It's happened where, like, at a party, there's, like, two songs playing, and I'm like, who does this... Is this normal? So, if so, I'm the normal one. Y'all are the weird ones, if that's, like, what y'all are doing. Because, like, this is super uncomfortable.
We are at the 50-minute mark. So, Megan, I have
Hello.
Two more questions for you.
Okay.
Firstly, is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to talk about?
I think we covered... I was really hoping to talk about accessibility, which is like what we basically talked the whole time about. So I'm thrilled. I feel great about this.
The entire time. Yeah, I was like, ooh, we want to talk about accessibility? Let's talk about accessibility.
Yeah. Okay. As somebody who's both a designer and disabled, this is my specialty.
Yeah. On that note, I'm going to ask you a question about that. Do you think that universities can do better when it comes to accessibilities?
Goodness gracious, yes.
Okay, because I am like 100% yes on my university.
I am too. So I go to a college. I won't name names. I'll be nice.
Yeah.
But oh goodness gracious, yes. To the point of like, I have been trying to file proper accommodations for fibromyalgia for almost a full calendar year.
Oh my god.
With my school, and it's still a debated topic. And still, I have almost failed classes because of my disability.
Jesus.
So, and even, like, on campus, like, half of, like, I mean, I don't use them for their intended purpose. If my hands are full, I'll elbow, like, a wheelchair door button, you know?
I thought you were going to say I'll elbow a wheelchair.
Yeah, I'll elbow, you know, I'll just get into a physical altercation.
Battle for the accommodations.
Yeah, but like, it's like, if my hands are full, I'll like, you know, elbow a button because I can't open the door. Half of the buttons on campus do not work.
Oh my god.
And it's like, so for me, I'm like, oh, I've rolled my eyes and I have to fumble with it. And it's like, okay, for me, I can get annoyed because my hands are full, but like, I am not in a wheelchair. If somebody who physically can't open this door, like, now they have to go across campus to a different door that they may not even be able to get to because not all of our stairs have ramps. Like, what do you do? Like, that's ridiculous to me. So I definitely believe that post-secondary education needs to really step its game up when it comes to accommodations.
Mm-hmm. For me, I have, so I have accommodations through my university, and something that's really frustrating is, first of all, when you get your accommodations, you aren't allowed to have double time unless you have like severe processing issues, because it's quote unquote unfair to other students. Right. So you get time and a half. So you get an extra half hour per hour, which is mildly annoying, but I'll take it.
It's better than nothing, but it's still not enough.
Yeah. And then you have the thing that's really annoying is, so for students like me, you get note takers. So in class, there's one person who you assign as a note taker, and they take notes for you. They upload it to Accommodation Center, whatever. This semester and last semester, I had no note takers. None.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so they select them from the class. So if nobody volunteers, you don't get notes, which means that depending on your level of academic ability or your disability, that could really impact your grades.
Oh, and that can result in a fail for some people.
Yeah. And it's like, and even if you do get a note taker, because they're just some random student, you don't know if their notes are going to be any good. So,
and like, what if that student's out sick for a week? Like, what happens then?
Yeah, there's no contingency plan. So that's something else that really frustrates me as well, I think, that I think the university should address.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, I don't work at a university. In my head, it makes sense to have staff in the school or student volunteers who are in a program through the college who are these note takers.
That's actually a really good idea. Like, if you have, let's say we have students taking courses on accessibility, or they're practicing, I don't know what course you would practice note taking, but if you're practicing note taking, that would be a really good way to do it.
Or even just, like, some people, like, enjoy that kind of thing as a hobby. Like, and this was at my high school, and it was, like, butchered to heck. But, like, mm-hmm. we had, like, a buddy system for students who had a severe disability to work along other students to sort of integrate them with, like, you know, prevent social isolation and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Based on their disabilities. So even having something to a less extreme at a college where it's, like, oh, these are students who believe in accessibility, enjoy taking notes, and want to meet new people. So they get paid a certain grade, or they get a credit, or they get hours or something. And their job is they work with this one student to be their note taker in their schedule. Cool.
Yeah.
Like, what an awesome opportunity for a university credit or something, right?
Yeah.
And then it's, like, actually mandated. So, like, you know, the quality of notes, not anyone can just, like, do it randomly. And you always have them because, like, you know, there's always volunteers. Mm-hmm.
Look at you solving university and, like, post-secondary education problems in one go.
Yeah, hire me, Ontario post-secondary, I dare you. I'll fix it in days.
I'll fix it. Vote Megan now for president.
Yeah, I'll gut your system. Watch me. I can't do the math in any of the finances, but I'll still make ideas.
We'll find an autistic who can do math.
We'll team up.
We'll team up. The art autistics and the science autistics will team up.
We'll become too powerful.
Okay, last note. Is there anything you'd like to say to any other creators, or I guess in this case, any other disabled people out there?
Self-advocate. Even if people, like, give you crap for it or talk down to you for it, I know it's easy for a voice on the internet to say this, they're not worth your time. I recently cut off 5 close friends, like, quote-unquote close friends, because they kept making fun of my disability. And I was like, you know what? We're done. And I feel better for it. I'm better off for it. You deserve so much better than you're probably being given. So just remember that. And, like, you're not a bad person for self-advocating. Like, that's, like, that to me is, like, the best advice someone can give you. Is just self-advocate. Love yourself because you're awesome. If people don't, they suck.
For a second, I thought you were just going to stop at self-advocate. I thought that was, like, end right there. I was like, all right. That's, you know what? Yeah.
No, TLDR, self-advocate.
TLDR, self-advocate. Yeah, I agree. They're learning to say no and learning to cut off people who aren't good for you is hard. And
very hard.
Yeah, and it's hard to, especially if they're people that you care about, even if they don't treat you well. And it's okay to be sad about it. It's okay to struggle with it or, like, wish you could do something else or want them back. But what's important is making sure you have a strong support system of people who care about you and people who want the best for you and people who believe you. So, yeah. Be nice to yourself.
Yeah, be nice to yourself because you deserve it regardless of what you think. You do. Mm. I promise. I guarantee it. You deserve
love
it.
Love yourself or else.
Or else. That's my closing statement.
Yeah, love yourself or else you'll find Meg in your closet just, like,
yeah, I'll break in.
With tea and, like, a blanket and be like, self-care.
Yeah.
Self-care.
In bed, Netflix on, take a nap now.
Honestly, I would love to have a demon like that.
I'll break it, don't worry. I know where you live.
Yeah, you do.
Look at
me. Oh no, what's that sound at my door?
Knock, knock, knock. Self-care. You're under
arrest. Self-care. All right, well, thank you for joining me, Megan.
Thank you for having me.
I think this was a really nice episode. It's just a nice talk about disability and advocacy and stuff.
I'm glad. Thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Heck yeah. All right. Do you have anything you want to promote, by the way?
If you're into UI UX, check out megturnbull.com. It's my portfolio where I post all my UI UX stuff there.
Cool. So if you need any UI UX design, check out Meg. What was it? Megturnbull.com?
Yep.
megturnbull.com, and I'll put that in the Instagram post. And so, this has been another episode of In the Margins. If you like the show, check us out at radiolaurier.com or at the Instagram page at In the Margins Podcast for more episodes. Thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye!